Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome back to another exciting edition of the Pointless Exercise Podcast. It's one of those podcasts where I just have one of my friends on, and I interview him, and we talk about stuff. So with me tonight is the second arrangement, tsa.substack.com's very own Kelly Dwyer. Kelly, how are you?
I'm doing great, Andy. Thanks for having me on.
So you can subscribe to Kelly's newsletter by going to tsa.substack.com, which I just said. You can also subscribe to mine at pointlessexercise.com. Or you can sign up for this here podcast, although if you found it, you're probably in good shape, at discipio.com. So there you go. So I was telling you right before we started that I have an idea for the Bulls, how to stop the injury rash. This would just be going forward. I can't do anything about the guys that have already gotten hurt. Okay. But from now on, when you sign with the Bulls, you go in and they give you your stuff. They give you your... You get what? You probably get a couple of pairs of sweatpants, and you get a t-shirt, and then they say, "All right, all we need to do is sign here, and please just give us your meniscus." You're not going to need it. You're going to tear it at some point. They're going to take it out. Well, how about we just preemptively, just take it? A little bone on bone never hurt anybody.
No. Tim Hardaway's going to make nearly the Hall of Fame with a bone on bone condition.
Right.
Don't you want to be Hall of Very Good Players with knuckleball jump shots and giant mustaches and a Bugs Life tattoo like Tim Hardaway? That's a good idea. Just hand over the meniscus. Alex, we knew you don't have one to give over, so that's fine with you. You know, you left it on the squash court somewhere in Tallahassee or wherever he's from. But the rest of you guys that can get rim, let's ante over.
I'm 60% positive that Easy Ed McCauley, born without menisci. There you go. Do you think you're getting an Ed McCauley reference in this one? He was an Illini legend, I believe.
Was he really?
I think so.
I always assumed everyone who played pro in college basketball from the 1950s and 40s was either going to NYU or St. John's or St. John's of New York University. My favorite part about Easy Ed, because he was born 100 years before any of us, David Stern used to say, I used to watch my poor Easy Ed McCauley go up against the mighty Bill Russell Celtics all the time, and it was such rough going for Easy Ed. He remained my favorite player, and David Halberstam looked that up. He's like, well, you would have been three, and he only played him once. I don't even have the internet. I'm looking this up.
I was wrong. Ed McCauley was a Billiken.
Oh, wow.
He's from St. Louis.
Wow.
He went to St. Louis University High School and apparently thought then he just had to go to St. Louis University.
You got to go to SLU.
So, and he was a territorial pick of the Hawks, and then he played for the Celtics. So there you go. For those, I don't know why I know Ed McCauley from something. So there you go.
I mean, you never forget a Billiken.
Was going to make that joke about Dolph Schayes. Decided Ed McCauley was funnier.
Dolph Schayes had a toupee. So, but then Easy Ed decided to stay in St. Louis, the fetid swamp of the 1940s that it was. And you know what? He deserved Bill Russell, even if they only met for like two quarters. They could use him, though. The Bulls could absolutely use him. Because, I mean, it's pretty much Easy Ed in the paint for them these days.
He's 6'8".
Old Nicky Vooch and his 5'8" arms.
Let's see here. He's not dead.
He's not 6'8" now.
He's not dead.
Okay.
He's all right. He's a spry 83 3/4.
Now, again,
it's worth a shot.
I mean, once we get him on a canvas low tops, he might, you know, perk up a bit.
That's right. Ah, oh, my. I really wish I had a meniscus in this. These shoes are so soft.
Once we show him that he doesn't have to play in a trapezoidal paint anymore. Triangle. No, Easy Ed, yeah, they traded him back to St. Louis for a bunch of picks that basically built up the Celtics dynasty for Bill Russell because St. Louis is like, yeah, we don't want an Afro-American in these here parts. We can't handle that. So we're going to, yeah, Easy Ed McCauley, that sounds like the whitest name I've ever heard. We'll take him back, certainly. And they did. And they took it back. To this day, they're taking it back. Yeah. I think they're probably on right now losing by 40.
Ed McCauley and Cliff Hagan for Bill Russell.
Oh. Cliff Hagan, running jump hook. I do know that. And played in the ABA and gotten a lot of fights.
What do you think Cliff Hagan's nickname was?
Oh, God. According to Basketball Reference?
Yeah.
Probably like, you know, the Hagstrom effect or some nickname that no one ever called him.
Lil Abner.
I feel like they divided the class up into Little Abner. Okay, we got six Little Abners. We got, you know, six Duke and Duchess of Haverstrom's. And we got, you know, they just like fill them out with random Little Rascal names.
You got,
not Little Rascal. Our gang names.
Yeah, Goofus and just Gallant.
Just to the side.
Do you remember Goofus, got a bunch. Goofus and Gallant from...
I got 40% Goofuses in my class this year.
What was that magazine called?
Highlights.
Highlights, yep. There are 12 things wrong with this picture. One of them was always like a horse upside down on a tree.
Well, you know, it depends on how you were raised, but sure. Sure.
Yeah. They lynched the horse.
Is again. How they, I only read it. I mean, I'm sure I had a subscription to it at some point, but I only usually read it in the dentist's office as a kid. So you were going through it with this, like,
dread.
Burr on the back of your neck. Yeah. Yeah, how many cavities am I going to have? And it's trying to talk me about, you know, Goofus always uses the non-stick spray before he helps his mother with the cookies, and Gallant just throws him right on the baking sheet. And also, you don't brush your teeth enough, Kelly. You just don't brush your teeth enough. Sure, you can never afford candy, and it's the 80s, and your dad only buys grape nuts, but still, you don't brush your teeth enough. I also remember Jerry Seinfeld poster in the dentist in the 90s taunting me for having perfect teeth. It's like, your show isn't even in syndication yet. How did you get a poster telling America's children to brush their teeth? But there Jerry Bear was, 1993 or something, touting those what Amanda Peet later called horse teeth.
What's the deal with non-tartar control toothpaste? You want out of control tartar? How's that? How's my Jerry Seinfeld? That's pretty good, huh?
That's good. Yeah. That's not bad. I'm that fan.
All right, well, speaking of tartar control, so the Bulls were really fun there for a while, and then everybody got hurt, and then Grayson Allen tried to murder a guy, and they just, it's still kind of fun, but you just, you know, there's ennui. Where is the fun team? Is it ever? Are we ever going to be able to reassemble it?
6 to 8 weeks.
Yeah.
6 to 8 weeks. You know, for a Chicagoan, you know, for it'll go by quickly. The sun goes down at 2:30, and you know, but right. Before you know it, it's when March. The, whatever it has
when
to
the
be,
tulips,
March 24th.
When the tulips come up, so will Lonzo and Alex Caruso.
And Alex Caruso. All will be right. And you. You know they'll be in the best of shape. They'll be in the absolute best of shape because, you know, after you have knee surgery, you can totally run around and you're going to be ready to come back and play an NBA game. It's bad. It's not good. They should have done the meniscus thing ahead of time, and they should have noted that Grayson Allen is like that and just shut everyone down against every Milwaukee game until the playoffs. It's very upsetting, and it's very disturbing, and they've gone from 7th to 24th in defense. I don't know how they were 7th. Stealing the ball is not a good defensive tactic in the NBA, but somehow they were making it happen. Well, they're fun. They're fun, and they beat the right teams. They beat the Cavs. They beat the Knicks. You know, they've won some. They've lost some heartbreakers, and they've won some games they probably shouldn't have. And DeMar DeRozan is playing his tail off just to keep them in games. And Zach LaVine probably had to come back from a knee injury a week early to get him that win in Oklahoma City. But you know, we'll get Jeremy Grant in to not fix anything all at ever once.
I like that. What do you need? The headline: Bulls trying to get Jeremy Grant without giving up Patrick Williams.
Mm.
It's like that's
just as funny as the headline that said Pistons not trying to trade Jeremy Grant.
Yeah.
Okay, guys. Okay, yeah. You play those cards real tight. Keep them up to that chest, Detroit. We believe you. No one's trying to trade anything. They would trade him for just the right to not even have to click on a link about whoever gives him a contract extension, let alone give him a contract extension.
I mean, not to go all Bill Simmons on you, but
you're going to have to, because he blocked me, so I can't read his contract.
Yeah, I got blocked. I think we talked about why I got blocked.
Oh, that's
him and Colin Coward. He promoted Colin Coward was going to be on his podcast, and I said, look out for douchebag on douchebag crime, and then he blocked me. His solution to everything, any team has is, hey, why don't you just get a buyout guy? Just wait for a buyout guy. It's like, okay, well, hopefully
if it's
there's one that you can use, but a lot of times there's not.
Ever. It worked once, and it worked for Bill's team, so he remembers it. Yeah. They got Sam Cassell and maybe P.J. Brown. And the Bulls could get Paul Millsap. But Paul Millsap is 6'4", and you know, was a rookie the year Borat came out, and he may have been a second year player the year Borat came out. If they're losing minutes defensively to disgraced Confederate statue LaMarcus Aldridge, I don't think he's going to be much of an upkeep for the Bulls. But I'd love for it to happen, you know. Keep the rookie that played terribly for four games this year and don't trade Kobe White and not have to trade for Jeremy Grant. And yeah, that'd be great.
Sounds good to me. I mean, they've played like 160 pound guy at power forward for most of the year. So why not try one that's the size of a fire hydrant? Why not?
Too small to be a shooting guard, but perfect size for Chicago Bulls power forward. Javonte Green, who is not that great at defense either. He just works really hard. Excuse me. He misses a lot of stuff. But, yeah, it's incredible to have three power forwards go down on a basketball team that is supposed to be in any way competitive. Yet here they are.
Sorry,
everyone in the East. Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, are you saying that Stacey King could actually punk Javonte Green by when a team was just rolling to the basket unencumbered? Then he could yell, hey, there's five Javonte Greens out there. What about David Nwaba? Where is David Nwaba?
Yeah, what was the one? I was trying to remember the one he had. Not Denzel Valentine, but the worst Denzel Valentine. Cameron Bairstow or something. Some late Paxson pick that he was trying to be like, it's Pippen Light, it's mini Pippen. I'm like, geez. This 10th man who managed to pass while being tall. Yeah, that's Pippen for you, Stace. I like the cookies. The cookies are good. I enjoy the cookies from Stacey. I enjoyed Adam Amin yesterday, who was born in 1986, saying that Orlando Woolridge and Reggie Theus were two of his favorite players growing up.
Well, no. What you didn't know was Adam had a crippling cocaine problem as a child.
Okay.
Yes, so they were his idols. Actually, I guarantee he knows Reggie Theus from the Hang Time.
Oh, the show.
That's now, it. Reggie got replaced by Dick Butkus, or Dick Butkus replaced Reggie?
Or did he replace Dick Butkus?
Oh.
I feel like it would be the first one because
it was a basketball show, and you don't build that around a Hall of Fame middle linebacker with no knees. Although, same idea. No, I guarantee you, Dick Butkus doesn't have meniscus. He's not missing any games because of his meniscus.
No way. I'm. Well, okay. Every single. If also, yeah, you're asking him to stand. You don't want to do that. My two dads. He was always at the back of that counter. At that that deli. What was it, like some sort of 80s deli that he was in, that Paul Reiser and that other guy and that girl with two dads would go to? I just imagining him with a clipboard and those knobby knees that had to scare the children. God, yeah, that's horrible. Hopefully it was just track pants the entire time. That still doesn't have any, you still can't say you enjoyed Orlando Woolridge. Again, the cocaine must have made him super aware, I guess. If he's a 2-year-old and going, boy, I really enjoyed Nets era Orlando Woolridge. I hope he goes to the Lakers next year and they don't really like him either.
Okay, so.
Otherwise, Adam's great.
Reggie Theus played Coach Bill Fuller in seasons 1 through 3 of Hangtime. He was then replaced by Dick Butkus, who played Coach Mike Kedawinski. Only Coach in season 4. Then he was considered a guest star. No, that's all right. I got the wrong line. Yeah, Dick Butkus. 3 years. Mike Kedawinski. Other notable cast members on Hangtime would be Anthony Anderson. And Jay Hernandez. Jay Hernandez was in the movie Friday Night Lights, and then some other stuff where he gets shot at a lot, I think. So there you go. Everything you wanted to know.
So Dick Butkus had to take over the Mike Golick role. So Mike Golick that was on Saved by the Bell, The Next Generation, where they went to space and they were in a dorm. So we had to be like a background guy to tie the A story and the C story together and come in and then make a dry comment and leave. Okay. Whereas Reggie is out there teaching plays. Real Sacramento Kings plays that he would later take to work for Ron Artest and Bonzi Wells in 2007. I missed Hang Time. That's a millennial thing. I just missed out on that. Getting up at 8 a.m. to watch Reggie Theus coach kids.
I set my alarm. I wasn't gonna miss it. I didn't set my alarm. I was in college. I was out of college. What was I watching? Watching a show had teenage girls on it. I guess I was watching it. 1995 to 2000.
Good coach.
I thought it was earlier than that. I guess not. Yeah, I did it for the. I did it for the actual. I just liked the basketball. I thought they did it right. I thought they did it right. I thought it was really well run stuff.
Bill Fuller sounds like, okay, we need 10 names that sound like Ken Howard. Who's got the best one? Bill Fuller, yeah. Yeah, okay. So much so that by the end of the show, they're like, Bill Fuller, wasn't he the White Shadow? No, that was Ken Howard. Oh, that was Jeb Transom. That was Trek in Halebo. I'm sorry, Ken Howard's a fine actor. I shouldn't make fun of his Super 70s name. Yeah, he's one of Stacey King's favorite players growing up, I bet. Those intro shots to the White Shadow where he's like not playing defense and falling to the floor and barely getting the rim. Stacey's like, yeah, I can do that.
So you think Ed Howard is better known for playing Thomas Jefferson in the movie 1776, or playing Ed Truck, the boss before Michael Scott on The Office?
I like the Ed Truck one.
Yeah, I think Ed Truck.
I'm not an Office. I haven't seen the repeats, but boy, that was a dark character. I remember that being that one had some grit to it. So I'm gonna go with that. I need to turn this tube amp off. I'll be back in 2 seconds.
That really was 2 seconds. Good. Very efficient.
Ed Truck.
So when the Bulls were destroyed recently by the Nets, it caused a panic. And of course we all heard the stat that was the 16th time that Kyrie Irving, James Harden, and Kevin Durant actually played together for the Nets. And it's like, oh, they're together now, and look out in the playoffs, you're not going to be able to beat them. And they still have played 16 times together. I remember watching it going, there's no way they're all going to be healthy. They're just not. That's why they have 3 of them, because they really only need 2. And they're probably not going to have more than 2. So.
But when they're there, and they're just traipsing, rolling out of bed to beat the Bulls in a 1-4 sweep. Yeah. The Bulls take the first game, then the Nets take the next four just to mess with us. But yeah, you're right. They're not 72 wins, 74 wins is not a problem for these Nets. They're keeping up with the Lakers tonight, but that's not saying much when Russell Westbrook is giving you 5 turnovers in the first 5 minutes of a period. Yeah, but I'm still scared of two of these Nets. They're still frightening, especially if everyone is going to be, you know, God knows what the Bulls going to look like in May, but Durant is just incredible.
Well, what size shoe does Kevin Durant wear, do you think?
What size shoe do I wear? Bigger than that. 14.
Okay, so if you think a 7-foot tall guy wears 14. Okay, let's say he does. If he wore size 13s, they beat the Bucks in the playoffs last year.
Yeah, see, I just always thought he was being a little slack with his game, and that, fine. And they didn't have Harden either, but still, I just nothing about the Nets has ever been fun. They have that weird gray court.
Yeah.
That looks like when Optimus Prime died, and Harden hates Irving. And probably vice versa. And Harden already wants to be out of there next summer. He wants to go to somewhere that isn't Brooklyn, because Brooklyn actually makes you pay off your tabs.
Could James Harden play power forward for the Bulls next year?
Yes. Oh, okay. God, yes. Right. Oh, yeah.
There you go.
He pays more attention than Javonte Green. He just doesn't dunk as well as Javonte Green. And Durant is just going to be passive-aggressive on Twitter until the other shoe drops with Kyrie. It's just the weirdest team, and if they back into a championship during all this, I'm just going to be the most upset.
Yeah. I mean, you know what's bad? When they wear the Drazen Petrovic throwbacks, and it's a market improvement in look. That shouldn't happen.
Yeah, they wear, they wear Kmart clothes. They look like they're outfitted by Champion. They are awfully basic with the uniforms. Yeah. And I was listening to the game before I came on, and it's just they go on this run to catch up with the vaunted Lakers and LeBron, and the Nets crowd is just not even into it because it's all Laker fans. It's all Laker fans. There are no Nets fans. It's filled up. It's fun. It's a great place to go see a game, but. So is Jeremy Grant going to get in the way of that? What did I give him? A size 10 sneaker? Size 8 sneaker? Is Jeremy Grant going to be the guy that stops him? Is Patrick Williams going to come back after 6 months on the shelf and stop the greatest player to ever play basketball? Is Alex Caruso going to guard Harden and Irving all at once? Convince Irving to get a vaccine? Pull it all out? I mean, with the Bucks, at least they could maybe re-injure Grayson Allen. I just thought of that.
Yep.
So, I hope they don't play weird tournament. Let's try to get the sixth seed so we can avoid having to say Woolridge a fifth time. And there's the East is so flat that you just don't really want to miss anyone. It's all just good. in a weird sort of Jimmy Butler and the Heat could win it all again way. Which is why you got to go. You got to go for it. You got to go for it. You got DeMar DeRozan at 39 years old spinning around taking 20-footers. Just push it all in. All in, I say. Get help. Not Kelly Olynyk. Don't get Kelly Olynyk. I like Larry Nance Jr. That'd be fun.
All right.
That'd be a lot of fun. They could trade a draft pick back to Portland. They could switch it around. They can do something. Larry Nance's dad used to get 50s in the dunk contest for being able to dunk two balls at once, which toddlers can do, which both a friend of the podcast, Andrew Lawrence's baby sons, can probably do at once now. But yet, that was the 80s, so we're like, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. At least he didn't miss. But yeah, Larry Nance Jr. would be fun. The Bulls had him for a day and a half, and then they dealt him, but you know, it's they've been remarkably lucky. Derrick Jones Jr. played his tail off. He was great. Yeah. He did everything they asked for. Javonte Green is trying hard. Williams is, you know, 18 years old still, it feels like. Nance would be good. I'm worried about Grant. He's going to ask for too many shots. He's the perfect combination of Harvey and Horace Grant, and I don't want that. But again, like back to the DeRozan thing, like you got to do something. You absolutely have to do something. They're not going to be this great next year. I love everyone on this team, but it's a win now situation. You absolutely have to go in. It's time to. I do not want to go down the stretch with Rod Beck as my closer. I do not want Rick Aguilera. I want them to go for the big time sort of thing. And if it ends up being Jeremy Grant, I'm not upset because maybe they can, you know, it anything is better than running Javonte Green out there and Nikola Vucevic and you know, the hope was Miles Turner, but then he broke his foot.
Yeah.
And then you could play, say it with me, Turner and Vooch.
That doesn't turn out well for Vooch at the end.
Oh yeah. But you know, at least we finally have a nickname for him that goes along with his stellar performance.
Yes. But
well, I'm not the, ready to give up on Vooch.
What do the Bulls really need out of a power forward? Because it seems like Jeremy Grant is the opposite of everything that they need. Like they don't need another scorer. They don't need a guy who doesn't want it, who the ball sticks to. They need somebody who can guard other guys and get some rebounds.
Yeah, which he kind of did in Denver, but it's just there's no market. There's no one.
He's
out
since
there.
Decided he's like Harvey. A scoring champion.
Yeah,
got to give me my shots.
And he's got a contract extension coming up this summer. Like he wants one. So I say no, but again, like I don't care. I'm going for broke in June. If I got to deal with Jeremy Grant making $50 million a year on my favorite basketball team for the next couple of years, just because it turned into that one random year where DeMar DeRozan twirled his way to a championship, I'll be okay with it. No matter what Patrick Williams turns into, I'll be absolutely okay with it. I'm absolutely willing to take a chance on a bad trade that I otherwise would any other year would go, no, why is that? That's a terrible trade. It's a bad market for the Bulls to try to get what they need. And Jeremy Grant is not the answer, but I don't want Alex Caruso with a broken wrist guarding Giannis anymore. Got to save those legs for his magnificent jump shots that sometimes hit the glass or the side of the rim or underneath the rim. He's not a good shooter is what I'm saying, Alex.
He's got a headband, though.
Who told him to get that? Was it Beasley or Montrezl Harrell? Someone, he didn't used to have a headband, and then the Lakers convinced him that you sweat a lot and you should...
Yeah, there's nothing to keep it from rolling off the back of your head to the front of your head, so you're going to have to wear a diaper. And that's what he does. That's what he should do. You should just wear a hat. Just actually wear a hat out on the court. See if that's... I think it's legal, right? Is there anything in the rule book to prevent him from wearing like a fedora while he's playing?
I can't remember his first name, so I'm just going to call him Opie Cunningham. The Ron Howard hat. The you know, just the various production companies he's got going on or you know, the movie that he's pitching at this particular time. It's just, a little baseball cap with like Apollo 13 on it. I mean, there's always a guy out there with a backwards cap on, and you don't know how he keeps it on his head. And it seems right that the NBA should represent that weird baseball cap basketball person at some point. So, and Alex should be the guy that does it.
What kind of hat? Doesn't Wesley Snipes in White Man Can't Jump wear like the bicyclist hat that almost looks like the old painter's hat? But the brim is straight up.
Was the coolest hat in the world for a couple of years.
You should try that.
Keeps it's you know, it's like a spoiler on a car, keeps the back end down, you know, gotta have that balance. And
Scott Skiles would fall off a bar stool, he saw that.
Fall down and hit his phone and accidentally call one of his kids for the first time.
Dad? Shit.
What? No. Hello. What? You called me.
So we're pretty sure, right, that Grayson Allen has never been punched in the face on the court, right?
Yes.
But, I mean, you look at that guy, how many times has he been punched in the face in his life? It's got to be at least a dozen. It's the most punchable face in the NBA.
Yeah. I just, I'd wish these, you know, I just wish it would, someone else had done it. So I don't get this, like, why does it have to be the bad character every time? Why does it have to be, you know, a David Nwaba? Why can't David Nwaba have taken Alex Caruso out? That would have been fine. The fact that it's still Grayson Allen bugging all of us, and then it just kind of reminded all of us that we're just going to be watching Grayson Allen on TNT and ESPN and ABC all the time in May and June now, and everyone hates that. No one wants to look forward to that, let alone knocking out glue guys left and right. Punchable, kickable, desertable, you know, get in the van, drive around, making sure he doesn't know where he's at, leave him somewhere. There's a lot of things that face has, you know, things he deserves that have yet to happen in his life. But, you know, I don't know. Maybe he's stuck in the hell of having to have a podcast for the rest of his life like J.J. Redick. So maybe that'll be enough karmic. We'll have to have a weird – it just bugs me that he's good. Like, not great, but there was a chance he was going to be out of the league for a second there in Utah. There was just a chance. Like, oh, it's not happening. It's just, oh, too bad. You're going to have to go to China. But no, he would not Jimmer Fredette his way out of the league. It's just... Couldn't it have been Dante DiVincenzo? I mean, that's a hard foul name. What guy did you get for the job? Well, the Ukrainian guy and Dante DiVincenzo. Not Grayson, again, for the millionth time. But they'll get, I mean, Jeremy Grant, you know, they'll start pushing people around, start mixing it up like his uncle did, you know, just all those old Bulls highlights with Horace just getting in Xavier McDaniel's face and Horace stepping up to Dennis Rodman. Oh, wait, none of that happened.
Nope.
Ever. No, shoot. Maybe I was thinking of Harvey. Stepping in there for Calvin Chaney. Liddell Echols. Various other players I have on my wall at the moment.
So I'll make a prediction. The Bulls, if they trade for Jeremy Grant, first game they decide this would be cool. We found a pair of Horace's goggles. Just wear them for like the first few minutes of the game. Crowd will go nuts. They're going to love it. And he ends up with perpetual cockeye, just like in The Jerk. Remember with the opti grab?
Which have we seen Horace? Have we checked in on Horace?
Yeah, he's got cockeye.
We don't know. He's got cockeye for looking for Michael Jordan out to. I mean, Jordan still owes him an open-handed slap or two. I don't care what happens in that documentary. Yeah, I mean, we put the goggles on, and then all of the Chicago United Center reminds itself how much it didn't really like Horace Grant in the first place. We just remember him clanging this or getting yelled at by Jordan, then you look at the box score, and you have like 20 points and 12 rebounds and 2 steals. I'm like, oh, okay, never mind. I'm sorry, Horace. Thank God you passed the ball to Paxson and didn't try that feeble layup.
Yep. He didn't want no part of that.
None of it.
Here, you're 24 feet farther away from the basket than me. You shoot it.
In the 90s. John Paxson probably had more post-ups than three-pointers that year. That's how bad it was back then. No, I'm shooting for Larry Nance. Miles Turner was a dream. It was a dream, and it's not going to happen. But Larry Nance Jr. He guards the rim. Portland could want to break it all up. I'm hoping. But then again, Jeremy Grant, all the jokes. Because he's gonna break plays. He's gonna catch steal passes that aren't meant for him. He's gonna. you know, well, we always thought when we were winning, the ball movement was the key to this. And I just felt like, you know, with the, I'm not name names, but I just think the ball's not moving as much as, it's like, God, no, no. But again, it'd be for like 2 months. And then the, you know, this weird team that was just put together 6 months ago can go win a championship and then figure out the rest later. Like, I mean that it's one of those weird years where the NBA, there's 28 teams that are going for a championship right now. And there's like two tanking teams. There's a bunch of crummy teams, but the crummy teams are like signing Jeremy Grant, signing Kelly Olynyk, signing Mason Plumlee. So it's just this weird sort of, I go for it. Just go for it. Who cares? You already gave up 14 draft picks for Nikola Vucevic. Go spend wildly again.
Well, look how close the Suns got to winning it last year. So it can happen.
Yeah. Suns don't have any losses this year. Or excuse me, don't have double figure losses. That's pretty good. They don't have double figure losses yet, which is remarkable. And yeah, they're all just brand new. And Zach LaVine's legs, when he doesn't have to do Zach LaVine stuff for four quarters and it can just be DeMar bopping around, by the end of the game, DeMar gets a bunch of free throws. AK, that general manager, is on it. They were last in free throws last year by a ton in attempts. And he's like, I'm just going to go out and get a bunch of free throw shooters and put Michael Reinsdorf's, if Reinsdorf says he wants to make this a basketball city and spend money and there's money to spend, fine, go for it. There's the Bucks can be had. I hate, it's a weird silly thing to say, but they don't have Brook Lopez, who's very good defensively. Like, they can be beaten. The Nets can be beaten. The Heat, the Sixers, they all have holes, I tell you. So many holes. Swiss cheese, all of them. So trade for whomever. I don't care.
I think it's a good indication of the way basketball used to be played, that they're called free throws. Not free shots, free throws. Just throw it at the fucking basket. Just throw it. Here, nobody's going to guard, just throw it. Because that's all they were doing. They were just throwing things. They weren't shooting. They were throwing.
They were on a tightrope, you know, with their life flashing before their eyes, going, I have to stay to the floor and I have to make it from here. And, oh, this seems like a Duesselberg. If I say so myself, this will be,
This is how sharp Eve, Naismith and the boys were. First, he nailed a peach basket to the wall. And then occasionally a ball would actually go in the peach basket. They'd have to get a ladder out and get the ball out of the basket. Then they came up with the brilliant idea to cut a little hole in the bottom of the basket. And if the ball ended up in the basket, they would punch it out with a stick. It took them like 5 years to figure out they could just cut a basketball-sized hole in the basket and not have to halt play for 20 minutes while some asshole had to figure out how to get the ball back. Listen, this is the sport we're talking about.
First of all, I've met his great-grandfather. And, I can see how that sort of conceptualization might get away from him. Might take a while. Plus, it's like the whole point of the game was to stop these YMCA boys from dry humping each other 32 times a January morning. So I maybe he was busy. Maybe he had to, get the hose on these McGillicuddies, these past and present Cincinnati Reds.
And you know what they say? You know how you separated the men from the boys at the Springfield YMCA with a crowbar.
Cut a hole in that basket.
That's why they had to get rid of the stick. It was not being used properly. We got to get rid of the stick.
Really,
I'd say it's hazing, but like they all seem to be enjoying it. So we're going to have to get rid of the stick.
they've named it and everything. And really, they're only making like three baskets a game. Yeah. So we're not, we can get Sven to climb his way up there. I don't think it's a problem that the Bulls are having. I mean, they also won all those games early on to get this sort of you know, they're in, they're going to be in for a while. They're not going to fall out of stuff. It's not, they're not going to go cold. None of these guys are going to forget how to start playing basketball. And the Vucevic, you know, I'm still high on him. I still think people can. I'm high on a lot of stuff, but I think Vucevic can come out and actually just start being. He used to just destroy teams with Orlando. He used to just, without having to break a sweat, and, you know, he's got that again going from in Chicago, but like he, it was like effortless with him, and he just put up 20, and it's not good with him right now, but it can't. He's like one of those sluggers that your team gets, and he was so good with the Padres for so many years, and now he's here, and it's just like, I used to watch him go 4 for 5 every time, and now he can't, you know, it's August, and he's still hitting 260. But you know, what are you going to do? We're already in on him. So 18 draft picks.
In that analogy, is he more Carmelo Martinez or Phil Plantier?
Oh, I think way better.
Yeah.
Carmelo Martinez was like...
Well, I loved Carmelo because I was a kid. And Harry called him Mellow Carmelo. And then we got traded. I was very upset.
Who had more Jumbotron pictures in his life than Carmelo Martinez? You know, he'd be a Red and a Pirate and a... Yeah, I'm thinking bigger than Carmelo. I'm thinking... who am I thinking? I don't want to say Mike Davis, but I'm kind of feeling that. God, this guy hit 24 home runs? How? It looks like he can't get down to first base. This man looks feeble, and he's wearing full eyeglasses on a baseball field. Just full-on ant glasses while playing Major League Baseball. Phil Plantier, yeah, I think he had a little more pop.
Yep.
I mean, I need an all-star. I need, I'm trying to, who's an all-star you throw around? I can't have
Greg
Gerald
Vaughn. How about Greg Vaughn?
There you go.
He's a Padre. He had 50 homers for the Padres, I think.
Just sensible, like the other Giambi. Like, he's one of those. And we got one of those on the Bulls, and that's okay. That's okay. You don't have to be in love with them. They can be Mike Richardson. I had to try to remember that guy's name. You know, they can have holes, but like no one else in the NBA is a center that can just put up buckets like that. Just in and out like that without having to stop and make it all about them in the Joel Embiid sort of way. Joel Embiid doesn't like slip his way into buckets, but Vooch can just not have to touch the ball and score. And once that gets going again, and he stops feeling like such a dunce for being screwed up on defense all the time. Now that Jeremy Grant's covering all his angles.
That's right. That'll fix everything then. Vooch's really freed up now.
Yeah. I don't know if your listeners have seen a lot of Piston games this year, but that guy is just everywhere. Jeremy Everywhere Grant, they call him, because we could trade him anywhere.
1993, Phil Plantier, 34 homers, 100 RBIs.
Wow.
He had 240. And then he played 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. He played parts of 6 more seasons. And I'm not sure he hit 34 homers combined. Guess who he finished up with? 1997.
The Royals for a fourth time?
1997. He was the St. Louis Cardinal.
Was he really?
Yeah, if you blinked, you missed him. 129 at-bats. 113
at-bats. That's a LaRussa guy. That's a lot of at-bats. That's a lot of blinking for me.
42 games he played for the 73 and 89 Cardinals.
Oh, yeah. That was not a team. That was not a team.
Is that Tony's first season?
Tony's first season was the good season in 96 where they rescued Ron Gant and got him for Andre Dawson wages and brought in Eckersley and Rick Honeycutt.
That was the year they... So it was 96 his first season? That was the year they had the 3-0, the 3-1 lead over the Braves, and then they had to try to beat Maddox, Smoltz, and Glavin.
That's the one.
Yeah.
Dimitri Young's big coming out party, and then Ozzie Smith ending his career with several. Well, I mean, most of his career was pop-ups to the first base side, feeble pop-ups. But that's how he went out a couple of times.
Well, this is all making sense now, because that year, before they played the Braves in the NLCS, they played the Padres. And Tony was looking around going, you know what? We swept the Padres, but if they still had Phil Plantier, we'd have been fucked. So the next year, Walt Jackety goes out and gets him Phil Plantier. I see how it happened.
You know, it works for every so often they get a big chunk of load in there, and then Larry Walker hits 400 for 2 months, and then the other times it was Phil Plantier. I just forgot that they brought in Rick Honeycutt in 1996, 49-year-old Rick Honeycutt, to just loop some screwy ones in there to set up Eck. And they made the postseason. It was good times. That was weird. That was insane. We were watching as a St. Louis fan. You're like, oh, this is weird. We have Tony La Russa now. That guy from the other teams. So I don't feel that angsty, icky way with the Bulls, but it is still odd that I'm just like, oh, we have a guy from Toronto and we have a guy from Orlando and there's the guy that was on the Lakers last year and Lonzo Ball from the TV with his dad and they're all in the Bulls. It's, you know, they're not new to me, but while they're still taking everyone by surprise, I really hope they dig in. Because I can't see DeMar doing this forever. Although I want to watch him try. I really do. It is really nice to watch a team that is last in three-point attempts where they're just not flinging it every so often because they're not good at it. Like, DeMar DeRozan is, like, not strong enough to do it. He shoots a different shot every time he shoots a three. It's like me out there, really. But go for it.
Well, who?
Lonzo. Sorry.
No, who was the interim coach when Billy was out with COVID? Was it Chris Fleming? I just figured I got his name wrong.
I forgot. That sounds about right.
Okay. So like he said during, I watched the one of his post games after the, it was after, I think, the second DeMar buzzer beater. The one in, where was that? That was in
Washington.
And Chris claimed, he said, well, yeah, DeMar, everybody says he's not a good three-point shooter. The reason he's not is because every time he takes one, his foot's on the line. And I thought, I don't think that's why.
No, that's Steve Blake.
So when I was a high school basketball player, we had to watch this Rick Pitino video. Rick would have been at, where was he, Kentucky? He might have been at Kentucky by then.
I don't think Providence had the A and AV club budget to pull off something that would have made its way to. Yeah, so Kentucky.
Well, if it was Providence, Billy Donovan probably would have been in it. But what one thing that I always remembered was Rick's. What do you think Rick said the worst shot you could take is?
Oh, did he say long two?
3-point shot with your foot on the line.
Oh, okay.
He goes, if you can't bother to take one step back, half a step back, and get yourself an extra point, then you're a moron. And then I'm sure he talked about guys being multi-versatile, which is my favorite.
I forgot about that. What year was that? I mean, he probably pulled it out every draft for all I know.
He did the draft for a couple of years on TNT, and every Jay Billis, to this day, does not understand that people's wingspan, your wingspan is like an inch and a tenth, a typical person, for every inch of height. So the average American has a longer wingspan than they are tall. Yeah. But Jay seems to think that any player who has a wingspan taller than their height is like this freak. Oh my God, he's 6'8". He's got a 6'9" wingspan. It's like, I got to tell you, Jay, it probably should be wider than that. But Rick got, you know, they would, I'm sure, you know, they're doing the draft, they throw it to you real quick, you got to have a thought on every player, and it's, you know, some guy who was wearing, you know, green Converse from Lithuania, and he's like, well, he's a multi-versatile player who can, he said multi-versatile 1,000 times that night. That's not a thing.
I feel like you can't be mono-versatile,
can you?
No. Well, if you're Ron Mercer, maybe. As soon as this is over, instead of working, I'm gonna Google Andy Dolan multiverse, because I gotta find out what draft that was.
Diversal.
That I'm sure it's still in your archive somewhere. But I bet that was a lottery pick. I bet that was like number six. I bet that was like
about everybody. White.
Okay.
You're saying when did he break it out the first time? Yeah, that's probably.
No, when did, because I didn't notice it when he said that. And I'm reading your diary. I'm like, yeah, that blankety blank just said multiverse. That is a multi on top of a multi on top of a multi.
All right. Well, here's a cursory search of the interwebs brings up Terrence Metcalf is what Rick Pitino would call multiversatile. Beats the hell out of monoversatile. I just stole my own joke from, let's see, what year is this going to be? This is going to be a 20th century joke, I guarantee you. Nope, 2003.
Holy cow. Wow.
19 years ago, making the same jokes. That's why the podcast is free, kids.
Well, I mean, it's people need to know that that happened, that he said that on TV repeatedly. People need to know that. People need to know that Brian Billick fell asleep in a hammock with a Success is a Choice by Rick Pitino book resting on his belly. I've never seen the scene. I've just had it explained to me by so many people, you and... you know, future guest Andrew Lawrence. So Pitino was just, I'm surprised he mentioned three. That had to be the first instructional video in the history of basketball videos to even mention a three-pointer, let alone go, you should be taking more of them instead of having your foot on the line.
Yeah, because it would have been, let's see, I played high school basketball from 1987 to 1991. So three-point line came into college basketball in 86, 87. So, I'm sure he probably was. He was a pioneer. He was multiversal when it came to
he probably was.
Those kind of references.
Oh, God. Thank God he didn't get Tim Duncan. Like, thank gosh. He didn't. The Tim Duncan just went to some town and stayed in the same place forever and had a dynasty and was boring and was great and didn't have to deal with Rick Pitino's, like, pairing him with Keith Van Horn or something, or like, I'm going to bring the multiversal Tim Thomas in, or just Antoine Walker and Tim Duncan having to play alongside each other because, you know, Rick doesn't want to. It's better to suit up alongside David Robinson than it was Travis Knight on a 7-year, $21 million contract. But just thank goodness that the Boston got screwed out of that one. ML Carr. drafted Eric Montrose, signed him to an 11-year deal, realized that he was terrible 1 year into that $11 million deal, traded him to Dallas for the pick that would eventually almost end up getting to be Tim Duncan. But no, San Antonio snuck in there.
I remember doing draft predictions because I was a dork way back. And when the Celtics pick came up, you always just picked, like, the best available white guy. And I remember guessing, do you remember Michael Smith from BYU?
Oh, yeah.
And that's, I just pulled it out of my ass, and that's who they picked. I was like, all right, this is easy.
This is so...
I wish I could have bet on that back then.
Just ridiculous that, like... Even after the ha-ha-ha Boston White thing happened, they would just go out of their way and draft Michael Smith. And it's like, we got a black player? Okay, let's train him for a white guy. We got a black player? And it's like, they weren't being racist. They were just being racist. It was just, why Joe Klein? Why Joe Klein? Why? You saw him play in Sacramento. Why bring him in? Why Jim Paxson? Why are you bringing in all the people that Larry Bird enjoyed beating and whooping up on? Because he always liked going after white guys. Oh, Red.
Yeah, the 89 draft, they had two picks.
Dan Volk.
They had two picks, the 13th of the 40th, Michael Smith, and Dino Raja.
Oh, Dino, okay. It's, you know, they got a type. That is hilarious.
92, they took John Barry. 93, they took AC Earl, and they thought he was white, and he showed up.
Probably.
And they were like, oh. Eric Montross and Andre Fetisoff in 94. And that pretty much, that was kind of the end. Darius Sungaila in 2002, but it was a second round pick. Didn't have a first rounder.
And they would have got Van Horn, no way around it. They absolutely would have got Duncan and Van Horn had that lads gone their way. Maybe Van Horn ahead of Duncan, just to, you know, just put the pressure on KVH. Just to let him know. Larry Bird's not walking through that door.
So I read a biography of Steve Kerr. Not an auto. He hasn't written an autobiography yet. By Scott. Is Scott Howard Cooper? Is that his name?
It is.
Oh, yeah. A Life.
I haven't read it yet.
Steve Kerr, A Life. And I like Steve Kerr, so I wanted to. And I started to notice it about. Actually, what jumped out at me was, as I was reading it, because Lute Olson is dead, Scott obviously couldn't interview him, so he's quoting Lute from Lute's biography, things he said about Steve Kerr. He's putting that in the book. And as I read more and more, I realized nobody's quoted in this book, or very few people are quoted in the book. Now, the book was still good. I enjoyed it. And at the end, when you read the acknowledgments, Steve refused to cooperate with the book and basically told other people not to call Scott back. And he didn't do it to be super malicious, other than the fact that clearly Steve is going to write his own book.
Yeah.
And was basically like, no, you don't get to make money off of me. I'm going to make money off of me. Mm-hmm. So but it took me about, I got about halfway through the book and thought, how come there's no quotation marks in this book? That's an exaggeration. He did talk to some people. He may have even talked to Steve's mom.
Oh, I mean,
but yeah,
he was just so nice on the phone. So I had to say yes.
Yeah. Stevie, I'm sorry. I talked to the writer.
It's like when you're flipping around cable channels and you see this. Oh, it's like, oh, cool. They're going to have a documentary on Led Zeppelin I've never seen before. It's a Roxy Music documentary. Okay, and then you watch it and they don't have any of the rights to the music. It's just these music writers from England that you've never heard of. Yep. Going, the thing about Led Zeppelin is they had the power, but they had the grace. They had the light and the shade. It's like, oh, I'm not going to hear how many more times, am I? I'm not going to hear from Judd Bushler on this one, am I? Drag.
I don't remember who the guy. I read the book, The Victory Machine. It was about the Warriors, about the Durant era Warriors. This guy from The Athletic wrote it. And I'm glad I got it from the library because it was a pamphlet. I went and picked it up and went, where's the rest of it? Why does it feel like he just stapled all of his Athletic columns together and sold it as a book? I was a little disappointed. It's like, come on, there's so much interesting shit that happened with that team.
Yeah.
And you pick up this book and you think you're going to hear it all, and it's all stuff you already knew. And you're like, oh, whatever.
It's they say with history, you got to give it 50 years. So we got to know about the whole Kevon Looney breakdown. Well, that's for other generations to have their way with, because sometimes you can't. Scott Howard Cooper knows you can't trust primary sources. Sometimes they forget things. They get them wrong. So I'll just have to wait on those Warriors. That I mean, they're not any good now. Ever since Stephen Curry got into, he's not shooting well. He's not playing well, and they don't. Him and Klay Thompson clearly don't get along. And I think it's all over for them. It's all for the book.
Yep, that's darn shame.
I mean, Warriors fans had it good for too long. Todd Fuller. Let's get an academic All-American up in here. Name a good academic All-American. Tom McMillan? Len Elmore? I don't know. Michael Smith?
Michael Smith, probably, yeah.
He was a Clipper commentator for years. He replaced Bill Walton, and he was Michael Smith. Tall, BYU, squared shoulders. Again, the Bulls could use him. I'd take him in a second. I'm trying to think of some other buyout guys, too, but it's just Paul Millsap. BJ Brown might still be available, but
What about those the big guys the Bucks used to have, like Paul McKeskey and Larry Krystkowiak? Oh, the Bulls tried that one. And Jack
they
Sigma.
Already started. Yeah, Sigma. They already started Andrew Lang before. So they had to. I watched a Bulls intro the other day from the 99 season. It was so sad. It was just the man in the middle, Andrew Lang, from Seton Hall, Mark Bryant, from Oregon, Brent Berry, and Ron Harper, and Kukoc, who they introduced first for some reason because he just wanted to get out of there so badly.
It was to preempt the booing.
There you go.
We better start with Tony. Or by the time we get to him, it'll be too loud. No one will know what we said. How about Roy Rogers?
Roy Rogers and Corey Benjamin, who was wearing a Knicks shirt when he was drafted by the Bulls, and made the Sun-times with a picture of him looking like Steve Francis when he was drafted by Vancouver, except he had just been drafted by the world champion Chicago Bulls and looked disappointed.
He wasn't doing like a Cliff Alexander thing where he was going to fake, and instead he's like, oh, I know I got drafted by the Bulls. I'd rather go play for the Knicks. I'm going to put that hat on. Like, no, it doesn't work. This is not, you don't get to pick. I'm sorry.
And they got that guy because Ricky Davis's attitude problems were too much, but the wannabe Nick was. I gotta get Brent Berry for his 99 Bulls book. I gotta be the guy that just has brings all that to life. Plane rides with Rusty LaRue. I mean, I know Bill Wennington had a camera, had a video camera that he went around with and taped stuff, and I just that has to be Peter Jackson needs to pull that out, and we need to get 8 hours of the 99 Bulls in a lockout year playing 50 games, scoring more than 75 points in some of them, and Mark Bryant, Roy Rogers, and Wennington before the Sacramento Kings would outbid the Bulls for his services, and yeah, I just, Will Perdue was not back on that team. That's not why he's so sour these days. They brought him back the next year so they could make the minimum salary floor, which is one of the many seasons in the early aughts where they had to spend money to make the minimum salary floor, which is why they need to trade I don't care this year, because everyone's got a broken foot, and go win a championship this year and surprise everyone.
There was a team just a couple of years ago that had to make a late season or like an in-season move to get above the floor. And then as soon as the other players found out, they got pissed. Because the way it apparently works is that if you're under, if you haven't met the minimum, then you have to write a check, an even amount check to all your current players to make up for it. So they're like, I'll figure out what they're going to spend the money on. And then some new asshole walks in the locker room like, what's he doing? We just signed him. Now we're over. Oh!
That is all true.
Threw him in the towel bin.
That is hilarious. I mean, how could you
probably
ruin
Paul
that
Shirley.
Any other
they just
way?
signed Paul Shirley just to come in and make the... Hey, I'm 40. That's about, we don't care anymore. That's fine. we need a guy. You're a guy. You've been paid more for less. You'll be fine.
What a wonderful way to make that work for... Just let everyone know that they're going to be able to buy a moped or a fish tank.
It's really good for team morale. It's all right. Yeah. If we don't sign somebody today, we're going to have to give all of you assholes $60,000. Good news! We signed somebody. Good news? Thanks. That's great.
Yeah, I don't get a boat, and I get two less shots per game. This is fantastic. I don't know who's going to be on the scrap heap for the Bulls. That Millsap, if the fans are wondering, he's old. He's old and he's tiny, but he's heady and he's smart and he steals the ball. The Bulls love to steal the ball. It's dreary. They were relying on a backup shooting guard to be their pivotal defensive force. They're point guard driven team defensively, and now all their point guards have broken things. But they'll be fine because LaVine is incredible. he just, I mean, him with fresh legs is just, I know I keep talking about it, but so do coaches. They're just like, oh, it's really, really hard to just have two guys that can just bowling ball their way into the middle of the lane.
Yeah.
And just do something. Just do something to make it so they can win a title this year. Because that's Levine tore his ACL like 8 years ago. It's not going to get better. It's not going to get easier. Alex Caruso isn't going to learn how to hit a jump shot. It's now. It's time. Throw it all in.
So if they have to trade for a power forward, I mean, I'm looking at the roster. I don't even know who you could possibly afford to give up. I mean, can you part with Matt Thomas? Or it's like, guys, we don't have a lot to trade because the guys that have value are the ones we need. So maybe don't get too excited about what might be coming in return in a trade.
Yeah, I mean, they have to trade Derek Jones Jr. because he's got a big contract. And it's just like, well, what happens when the guy that they trade for gets his hand caught in someone else's uniform and then tears a ligament and is out for 6 to 8 weeks? And they don't have that. But I don't know. Patrick Williams is a 4-pick, so he's making a hefty chunk of salary. He's probably making about the minimum. And then between that and Jones and the pick they have for Portland coming in, you know, it's enough to where they don't have to give up Kobe White.
Yeah.
Because I'm not ready to give up on Kobe White. I don't want more. I don't need more Carusos. I need guys with happy eyes that are ready to come in and dive for loose balls and hit open shots. And that's what Kobe does. But Williams, I can, you know, but I'm sure he'll be wonderful someday. But the Bulls are led by a 30-something-year-old superstar who was on his third team of being a superstar. So get it done now.
It always cracks me up that Alex Caruso went to Texas A&M. Because it doesn't feel like anybody from Texas A&M actually plays in the NBA. But much like Easy Ed McCauley, Alex Caruso is from College Station, Texas. And he went to A&M Consolidated High School in College Station, Texas. So he had to go to Texas.
He had to. No way around it. Oh God. All the yeah, he had to. Well, you had the parking space, Alex. You know, you've had that since your sophomore year. So I mean we just thought that's how they talk down there in A&M. I'm still upset at Texas A&M for beating Notre Dame 35-10 in the Cotton Bowl, Tim Brown's senior year.
Yeah, remember when the guy stole Tim Brown's towel? Remember that? So A&M, no. You know, they have that asshole, the 12th man.
I was
man.
Seven.
They have some They have some walk-on who always plays on the kick coverage team. And Tim Brown, returning a kickoff, he tackles him. And while he's on the ground, Tim had a towel tied into his belt. He ripped it off and ran off the field with it. He stole his towel.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I remember about that Cotton Bowl.
I think I remember that. I mean, that's the same Cotton Bowl where J.R. Ewing met up with Dusty Farlow, and you know, to hash it out. You know, I wonder what's in that spot right now, because it really was a parking lot when it was a football stadium. Just an uneven ground of AstroTurf and weird sort of. It never looked like a pretty place to play football. Between that and the Cowboys Stadium that was just giant sunny glares at 3:30 on a December Sunday, just sunshine forcing its way into a game you don't want to watch because the Cowboys have ended up winning. Ah, I got a lot of problem with Texas football stadiums.
Sounds like it.
Yeah, Timmy Brown, Heisman year, 35-10. That was not. It was probably Andy Heck's last game. Where he became a Seahawk. Did he ever end up with the Bears, or was that
he just... did, of course.
He did.
Old number 66. Yep.
He did, okay.
And he played for the Bears. He was a tight end at Notre Dame first. They moved him to tackle.
Oh, I didn't know that. Future flame.
Lou moved everybody around. He Frank Stams, who was the defensive end on the championship team, was a fullback. when Lou got there. And he still kept number 30. So it looked weird when he was rushing the passer wearing number 30.
This is tailback. I don't care. Favorite football team ever, one of them at least. You know, Tony Rice in the option. That's my kind of ball.
So on the basketball reference page for Alex Caruso, they've got many nicknames for him. Some of these are clearly just made up. Somebody at Basketball Reference just entertaining themselves. The Bald Mamba. Bald Eagle. This one we've heard. Caruso. Goat. AC. White Mamba 2.0. Who's White Mamba 1.0?
Because Scalabrini was Red Mamba. Who was White Mamba? Was I White Mamba?
Yeah, he might have been. And then the accountant.
Is A&M an accounting school? No, it's...
Yeah, I don't think the A in A&M stands for... Pretty sure it's agriculture and mining. I don't think it's accountancy.
Accountant and money.
Accountancy and money.
Accountant and money.
Account the money. Count de Monet from History of the World.
No, he'll be back. He'll be back in March. It'll be fine. A whole month to get it together, to get home court in the first round. And
how important? I mean, he really shouldn't be shooting as much as he is anyway. How important is the wrist?
No,
just
not
cast
at all.
It
he
up.
Played with
let
it.
Him play. Yeah, he was stealing the ball with it. He blocked a shot with a broken wrist. Why not?
He is not a good shooter, but he is good at throwing his other 96% of his body in front of people. So just use that. Then again, you got to get the wrist repaired in time to come and lay out Grayson Allen with one punch.
Well, but that's why leave it cast. Cast it.
There you go. Yes.
Actually, that's how you remove the cast. You break it on Grayson Allen's head. I think it feels pretty good now. Let's go. I'm going to admit that the first few times I heard Stacy yell, Io dos tres, when Io made a three-pointer, I didn't know why he was doing it. A little slow on the dos part. Like, what is, now he's just babbling. Oh,
he's babbling.
Dosunmu. I guess that's where the dos is from. They need some kind of, like, glossary for these.
Because
some of them. They're thinkers.
We're halfway through the season. We'll figure it out. Plus, we got, you know, it'll settle down a bit because he's about to go through that rookie wall. But God, how did that guy fall in the draft? 6'5"? I had no idea. I don't know anything about college sports.
It didn't make any sense. He was the Big Ten player of the year. He averaged over 20 points a game. He played point guard.
I saw that he averaged like 6 rebounds a game or something crazy. Like that always means good at the NBA. Always. Yeah.
And he just kept sliding. And it's like, I mean, Arturas jumped on him like Garpax jumped on anybody from Iowa State.
It's nice to have an NBA general manager instead of just, well, we know basketball, so we can probably run an NBA team. Instead of, no, this is how the NBA works. It's different. You don't just get to be good at picking basketball players. You have to have a plan. Picking a bunch of 6'8" guys who are multi-versatile. I wonder what Pax is doing this year.
He still got an office there. You think he ever goes in it?
I mean, did he go in it when he worked there?
He's in it more now. Because he doesn't have to worry about somebody stopping by and asking him what the hell he's doing.
You got the Big 12 network at home.
Fred's about to need another job, so you know maybe Pax can hook on with. The Windy City Bulls are going to need a coach, I would think.
I mean, they're also trying to win, and they're trying to develop players, and I just don't think Hoiberg is. The Bulls just couldn't. You couldn't take them seriously for a whole 5 years there. It wasn't even like they. It wasn't like, oh, they brought in a John Fox, and it's like, oh, well, this is lame and it's embarrassing, but it's a guy that has done stuff.
Yeah, before. guy who went to and lost two Super Bowls, but at least he went to two Super Bowls.
Yes,
or no, they brought in a Fred, super nice guy. Can't wear a tie because he'll die.
Yes.
That's why it'll be that'll be the cry for help. If you look over to the Nebraska sidelines and Fred has a tie on,
big red
he's
tie.
Giving up. Oh my God, get it off of him! His heart is going to stop. I love that was like the one limitation he had after the surgery.
Yeah,
skydiving fine. You want to go high altitude skiing? We have no problem with it. Just whatever you do, don't put on a tie. You'll be dead within a minute.
You gotta go in there and you know, practice is short a few players. They need a few bodies. You gotta roll in there. Fred, you do what you gotta do. That's fine. But God forbid you strap on a Windsor knot and this is all over for you. We can't have you flying too close to the wings or to the sun on the wings of some. It was the most uncomfortable coach I've ever seen on a sideline in a pro basketball situation. He was just like, he just looked like everyone was watching him while he was working and they weren't because he wasn't doing anything. There was nothing to watch. What is that Minnie Pippen's name? Cause Cameron Bairstow was, I think, that guy from Wake Forest, or maybe that 7 foot guy from, no, that was Luke Schencher. Is that the 7 foot guy from Wake Forest? I can't remember. Bulls need all of them. Each of them. Maybe Robin Lopez could be a buyout.
Well, let me look up Chandler Hutchinson, see if it says Minnie Pippen under his nickname. Oh, he doesn't have any nicknames. Chandler Hutchinson.
Really?
Yeah. Well, is it like Wikipedia? Can I submit it?
How bad do you have to be a basketball to be named Hutchinson and not be nicknamed Hutch? Like, accountants get nicknamed Hutch if they're Hutchinson. That's Hutch. He's competent at what he does, so we're going to call him that. And he was just Denzel can't even hang on as a replacement player. Listen, the Pac's years are not Wendell Carter's wearing Harvey Grant glasses. I don't know if I'd want Wendell Carter back either.
I never cared for Wendell.
I wanted to care for him, but it was just...
So did I. But they'd watch him play, and it's like, all right.
Push around a bit.
Everybody tells me how good he is, and I don't see any of it. Ever.
Seventh down to 24th in defense. They're fouling too much. I also think that just once the playoffs get better, they're set up. But for them to play the same team over and over and over again is very good. Instead of having to play Franz Wagner and all these try-hard go-getters in the NBA schedule.
Well, maybe they can petition the league. Said, okay, here's what we'd like to do. It's fine. We're going to play a 7-game series, but on the off days, we'd like to play the Magic. Just for a tune-up. Well, it'd be fine. We need to break it up, get our confidence back, and then it'll be fine.
Need you to bring in the Thunder on a train, and because their execution's a little sloppy.
All right, so we're going to play games. We're going to play games 1 and 2 in Brooklyn. Then we're flying to Sacramento. We'll meet you in Chicago for game 3. Arturis, I don't know. That's a great idea. Whatever. You know who made out really well during the pandemic? The guy at Fanatics who supplies quarter zips to the coaches. I mean, you got to admit, they turned the bubble into never having to ever wear a suit again. I give a lot of credit to the NBA coaches for that. Because it was always dumb in the first place. And they're just like, nope, it's too dangerous to wear a suit. There's a deadly virus.
You saw Hoiberg, we could all die.
That's right.
Yeah, and they all look like drips now. Because it's like, right. They have a new one for every game. Yeah. So someone's making out.
I mean, some of the guys can really pull it off. And then there's, you know, like Tibbs, who looks like he's squeezed into whatever they put him in.
Yeah.
He didn't look comfortable in a suit, but he looks a lot less comfortable. Only Tibbs would look less comfortable casual than he did formal. It's like, I don't like it. Can I wear a tie over the quarter zip? No, you can't. Oh, shit.
It's what he's most comfortable doing, too, is being in a basketball outfit barking orders. This should be him at his most... I mean, this should be what they bury him in, and yet he's... It looks like it's, you know, bursting around him.
So if Frank Layden were coaching today, he'd be wearing like a bathrobe on the sidelines. He's got his pajamas on and a bathrobe, and he's like, all right, this is great. I've never felt better. Like, coach, you got to put pants on.
He looked awfully comfortable in those suits, though. You know, blue blazer. They have big and tall shops in Brooklyn. God, what would he have done? He would have quit. He would have quit. It's like Jerry Sloan. You take over. December 88, Jerry Sloan. The day he unloosened his tie and took over the Jazz.
And Jerry would still be wearing a suit, but he would also the John Deere hat with the suit. That's to show he's casual now.
Yeah, what would those guys have even worn? It would be here, Larry Bird. Here's your cool. Here, Paul Silas. Put on your sweatsuit.
The best is to watch like '80s and early '90s NFL games. You know, NFL Network will be showing like, you know, Cowboys Niners, and there's Jimmy Johnson in a starter jacket.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. Got my team approved turtleneck with the logo on it sticking out, and yeah, they look like advertisements in Sports Illustrated.
When Mike Nolan was coaching the Niners, his dad Dick had coached in the NFL, and he wanted to honor him by wearing a suit because his dad always wore a suit. Okay. And the NFL told him he couldn't wear a suit on the sidelines. They said, no, we have an apparel deal, and you have to wear that because that'll help sell it. And Mike's like, who's buying clothes?
Who's buying?
Because I'm wearing them. Ooh, you know what I'm going to get? I'm going to get that sweatshirt that Mike Nolan is wearing. That's cool. He eventually had to work out some kind of deal where Reebok made a suit. And it had to wear, and he got to wear it, and he had to wear like a lapel pin with the Reebok logo.
You gotta be kidding me. Oh my God.
It's the most ridiculous thing ever.
And everyone went out and bought Reebok lapel pins because they could not be seen at the office the next day without a Reebok lapel pin.
You gotta see this, huh? I got the Mike Nolan pin. Woo! Oh, that's great.
That is nuts. I didn't know it was a thing. I didn't know you couldn't pull that off. I wonder if someone tries the Connie Mack, if the man Fred Field will get in the way of that one.
The NFL will do a thing. I don't know if it's not a whole month. Maybe it's a whole month. I think it's a couple of weeks where they wear the camo. The coaches wear the camouflage stuff on the sidelines.
Yeah, yeah.
And Bill Belichick won't wear it. And so he got asked about it in the press conference. And they're like, do you get fired? I don't care. And he's like, Dad worked at the Naval Academy. I've been around actual service people.
Yeah.
He goes, me dressing like a duck hunter on the sidelines isn't honoring them. And I was like, oh, that's pretty good.
That's good.
Yeah, I agree with you there, Bill. No, instead he classes it up by just cutting his sweatshirts off at the elbows.
Looking like something Lars Ulrich would wear in a studio in 1991.
I want Bill next year to go full Jennifer Beals and just cut the hood off and don't wear a shirt under it. Just have it hanging off there. And then if they win the AFC East, he can like lean back on the bench and they'll just dump the Gatorade from above.
Yes. And we will all be... have that pivotal moments in our own, just we're going to ruin that now.
There'd be some junior high kids who puberty stops. It just kind of goes backwards seeing that. Like, oh no, oh no, I have weird feelings now.
Maniac. Oh, that would be. I saw the Patriots once when they were bad, and it was the year that the NFL did the throwback uniforms, and it was like the second or third week of the season, and they made the Patriots put on the helmets. That the Patriots had like recently changed their helmet to like the silvery, like updated logo, and gotten rid of the old school white helmet with the Minuteman on the front,
yeah, Pat,
and the 3-point stance.
Pat Patriot.
Okay. They had to go back to Pat like three games after getting rid of Pat. They're like, no, you're retro now. We need your last helmet. Bring him in. So I got to see a Bengal Patriot game with David Klingler at quarterback, and Bengals wearing helmets with Bengal stickers on them, and the Patriots throwback uniforms from 2 months ago. And now they're like, you know, the standard for football excellence. It's been an odd run.
Yeah, I remember when they announced they were going to do throwback uniforms thing. What are the Bears going to do? Take the orange out of the C on the helmets? Because they don't change.
Yeah.
I had to go back to those weird ones that had like that pattern on the front, like a big V, like big, increasingly larger orange V's on the front. And they wore like khaki pants.
It was very weird.
And then they finally dug up they have the white ones now that are from like the 40s, which are really cool looking. And they even have the Wicked Witch of the West socks. Except they immediately had to apologize because they went back to a uniform that the team wore back when African-Americans were banned from playing.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Showed off the uniforms. They went, those are cool. And they're like, okay, now we have to say we're sorry. We're going to wear them anyway, but we're sorry.
We're going to put on Patriot Pat instead. And
that's what they should do. They should just wear some other team's uniforms.
That's what Hallis would have done.
Well, that's how you got the ones they have. They're old U of I uniforms.
Yeah. Guys, I got a deal. Luckman asked for a raise, so we're all wearing inside-out uniforms from the Fort Wayne Federals or something.
Yeah. Yeah, your pants don't fit? Well, take it up with Sid. He's got all the money.
Yeah. He's the one who's got enough for a car. Entire automobile.
I think I told the story on the Remember This Crap, but that one year the Cowboys played the Packers played in Dallas in the championship game, and the NFL brought out, it must have been like the, I don't know, some anniversary, 75th maybe. And they brought out some Hall of Famers to come out for the coin toss. And one of them was Sid. And Sid actually had his Bears 42 jersey on. Not they didn't make the poor 80-year-old guy wear the pads and everything, but he had the jersey on. And he gets out to the thing, and apparently he thought he was going to do the coin toss. So he got in his head that they're going to hand Sid the coin, and he's going to toss it. And instead, the ref tossed it. Brett Favre was out there, and Favre was telling the story. He's like, you've never seen an 80-year-old that pissed. He's like, I thought he was going to go after the ref and to grab him. I'm like, hey, Sid, great to see you. Sid, that kind of brightened Sid. Sid got recognized, so he felt okay. But that was really funny that Sid was about to take a swing at the ref because he didn't let him toss the coin.
I mean, how many other quarterbacks from whenever the heck Sid Luckman played still get brought up as much? Like the top rated passer in each of his years doesn't get brought up half as much as Sid Luckman because him and Johnny Morris are still pacing the Bears.
Yeah.
This coin represents more than Hallis ever played me, and I finally get to have
like,
one of them in my hand. And you're this.
That's why he wanted the coin. He's like, Hallis owes me this.
Zebra's gonna take it away from me. That's great. Bowles used to do that with Bob Love coming out. They're just random. Bring Tom Boerwinkle up to do a ceremonial first basket, their first jump ball, but. I mean, then again, these are two things that no one likes. No one likes jump balls. No one likes coin flips, especially after Sunday.
Yep.
Like no one cares. No one has ever thrown a jump ball that's good. You know, at least first pitches are fun. You know, you can see if the pitcher that only retired like 4 years earlier is going to do it from the mound or if he's going to step up a few feet. That's always fun. Like, come on, Eckersley, you were still pitching in 98. You can get on the mound.
Yeah, it's that video. I don't know what year it is, but Nolan Ryan throwing out the first pitch. And he throws it 85 miles an hour.
Awesome.
Catcher's like almost handcuffs the catcher. He's like, holy shit. Like, well, yeah, he's still kind of good.
He's, you know, in a lot of ways was like better at age 48 in 1990.
Yeah, he couldn't throw a strike until his 40s.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I'm just getting the hang of this, guys, now. Do you mind if I just beat up on Robin Ventura a little bit? He shouldn't have retired. He really shouldn't have retired.
You're right, though. The ceremonial coin toss is weird. But how about this? How about an overtime in the playoffs? You don't have the ref do it. You bring out a celebrity to do the coin toss in overtime. It would be a perfect moment for, like, Carrot Top to come out with a coin, like, attached to a rubber band. And he throws it out and snaps it back real fast. I think Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes would have really appreciated that.
Hilarious.
Yes.
Because, you know, what better chance to laugh at things than while you're in a tie? You're not ahead and you're not worried. You're not behind. It's a tie.
Season hanging in the balance.
But it's a tie. It's like the first day of spring training. It's, you know, everything is possible. So that's the perfect time to Carrot Top to come in and do a joy buzzer handshake. And that's good. We need that. We need that, and we need 4-point field goals in the NFL. I've decided it's time to mix this up. These coaches just got the hang of the 2-pointers, and I'm sick of it. I just want to blow it all up. I'm gonna need some 56 yarders for four points. Change the math. Blow it all up.
You could rock and jack it. I think like a 4-point field goal. I think instead of just being extra far, it should be from like a horrible angle. It should be like. Like the kicker is basically out of bounds when he starts his approach and has to kick it from like the basically the sideline and see if he can curl one in. It's like a corner kick in soccer, except now they've got to kick it through a big yellow Y instead.
Because anyone can go from straight. I mean, the Robbie Gould kicking it over the Packers when they were coming out before the game the other day.
Yeah,
you know, that's straight ahead. That was great, but it was straight ahead.
Yeah, anybody.
So
anybody
get it from the side. Oh yeah, that's where it's at. Then you're really throwing some grass in the air and seeing where the wind's going. And I like that. We need to make kickers more integral part of NFL games, I've decided.
I think how exciting it would be. The kicker comes out, the coach goes over, tells the ref, we're going for four, we're going to kick it from the sidelines. And everything tilts on its axis, and they try to kick one from there. I think it's so great. I'm going to write that down.
Oh, that is fantastic. Various places from where to kick the ball around the world style.
I bet if they find a sponsor, they'll do it.
Oh, absolutely. And then enough of this worry, this dread that you're watching the NFL games like you have your entire life, and it's all threes and fours and sevens, and all of a sudden it's something new. I like it.
All right, Kelly. I think we've hit on all the topics that we plan to talk about, which we didn't plan to talk about any, so it was perfect.
We didn't plan to talk about any, but I hope the Bulls plan to talk about all of them. I mean what I say. Patrick Williams can be a Hall of Famer. I don't care. Give him up for anyone who can walk and chew gum at the same time and play basketball, because Patrick Williams can't do that right now.
I doubt Arturis listens to this podcast, but I guarantee he's assigned Mark Eversley to listen to it. So you got the ear of the guy. You got the ear of the guy who has the ear of the guy. And this will all happen now.
Well, what if, I don't know, just mislabel it. And what if he listens to the Huey podcasts and you spin the wheel and it ends up on the 86 Cubs. And then you talk about, you know, back to Eckersley again. And so he's trying to catch up on a Chicago history, and he stumbles into this one, and there we go. Suddenly we have Harvey Grant's kid playing for the Bulls. Yeah.
Yeah, the 86 Cubs, that'll be 20 minutes just about Ed Lynch getting beat up in a fight and then getting traded to the Cubs and having to play with all the guys he was in a fight with. I feel like his general manager regime was just him getting revenge on the team.
God.
So why do you want this job, Ed? I hate you motherfuckers, and I'm going to trade away any good player you have. That sounds good to us. All right. I got traded to you, and I missed out on... I played for the Mets for 15 years, and I got traded 2 months before the World Series, so screw you.
Was Sarge in that fight? Was Gary Matthews in that fight?
I'm sure he was. If he wasn't, his helmet came flying off and was in the fight.
This is pre-Lester Lancaster. This is before he made his spring training move in 87. Who else would have been in that fight? 86 was rough.
Yeah, 86 Cubs, you would have had Shawn Dunston would have been in that fight. The Bull was probably still around. Leon Durham.
Oh, that's right. Oh, this is still Smith, and this is pre-Nipper and pre-Schiraldi. So Smith is in there.
Yep. Oh, yeah, no, Lee was asleep in the bullpen. He didn't even know what happened.
That's right. The
guys all walked by, and he's like, what, do we have a rain delay? He's like, no, we just had a fight. Oh.
Listen, do you want me to go up three and three down, or do you want me to be awake for the sixth inning? Because you only get one. You only get one. Oh, God.
86 Cubs, would that have been? Was that the end of Larry Boa? Or was that...
I don't know, because you guys haven't done it yet, I guess.
No. Larry's... I know we talked about this. If we talk about Larry Boa, I have to talk about... So I think it was 85. 85, I think, was Larry's last year with the Cubs. Because Sean was there, and it was like, go away, you suck.
Yeah.
Super
old.
Yeah, 85. He hit a robust... hit 246 for the Cubs, got traded to the Mets, hit 105. Attaboy. At some point, Larry started wearing glasses while he was batting. And Harry was so excited about this. He's like, oh, just think, I bet it looks like a beach ball up there to him. Well, he can't hit a beach ball either. No. That's what we just learned, Harry.
So 5'9". Yeah.
Did you see the video going around the Twitters a couple of days ago of the White Sox game when Harry and Jimmy Pearsall were doing the broadcast and the inflatable doll gets thrown on the field?
No.
They were very excited about that. It took Harry a minute to figure out what it was, and once he did, they thought that was great.
Yeah. Oh, God. Because Harry pre-87 was just the horniest. It's just anything in a tank top in Wrigley Field's, especially the right field, the bleachers with money. Oh, my God. He was just, okay, Harry. Oh, God, let's just, Arnie, what are you doing? Arnie, new shot.
Yeah. Oh, look
baseball
at those
player
two.
Shot.
He kisses her on the strikes, and she kisses him on the balls.
I watched Harry talk with Mike Marshall on a pregame YouTube clip recently, and just watching Mike Marshall explain what was going to happen in the 1980-81 strike. And Harry was engaged. Harry was good. Harry was trying to come from both sides, trying to see it for both sides. And I enjoyed that. A blow up doll. Oh my God, a South Side blow up doll.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say anything more before they. That's wow. I'm going to go chase that down. So is Harry. I got a road trip coming up. You need some company out in Kansas City.
Yeah. Yeah. At least. God, they didn't do the thing, a lot of times, like a beach ball will come out of the stands or whatever, and then the player will pop it with his cleats.
Spike it, yeah.
He didn't do that to the doll. No. The doll made it into the bullpen. Intact.
Yes. Claudel Washington wanted to have a buy her a drink.
Yeah, good thing David Cone wasn't pitching for the...
Oh, God. The only remarkable, non-boring thing this guy ever does in his career, and it's that. It's like, he was just kind of around for 20 years, and oh, yeah, he Louis C.K.'d in a bullpen once. guy.
Well, he's the new analyst on Sunday Night Baseball. I'm sure he'll talk about that every week.
Oh God. Oh, David Cohn. He's so boring. Why? That guy should not have been on the Mets. I didn't know Larry Bowen ended up on the Mets. That's fantastic to me. Trying to have it, him and Hernandez on the hot corners for one last year before everyone decides they've had enough Larry Boa for this decade. Really shouldn't have made it past 1980, but oh, I shouldn't say that. A lot of Cubs fans listening. I'm sure he was fine.
Oh, he didn't get traded. The Cubs released him on August 13th, and 7 days later, the Mets were like, eh, fine. You can go play for us. I guess we need somebody. Might as well be you with the... I think I always thought was funny. You know, when Larry was a manager, he was like this tough guy manager. You know,
yeah.
And it's like, Larry, I remember watching you play. You weighed 104 pounds. Your bat was bigger than you. You couldn't throw the ball. You couldn't throw the ball from short to first without six hops. Who is afraid of you?
Bucky Dent had range compared to that guy. You know, at least Bucky Dent had the good sense to lighten up his bat a little bit through however means necessary. Yeah, Larry Bowa was a stump. Was a skinny stump that I don't know, just immediately became a manager 18 months after his playing career ended. It's like, yeah, this guy, he's obviously got some anger popping up. Let's put him in Philadelphia. I can't remember. Was he on? Yeah, he was on the Pete Rose teams. Okay. Well, that should be another Adam McKay, Will Ferrell movie coming out with Tug McGraw and stuff. That'd be a fun team to talk about. But it won't be because it's Philly and no one cares about Philadelphia. They only care about Magic Johnson and Jerry Buss, Dr. Jerry Buss. God knows how he probably got the doctorate the same way Bill Cosby did.
Larry was an all-star five times.
Oh, my God. No way.
How many seasons of a league average OPS do you think Larry Bowa had in 16 years? So how many times was he league replacement? He was league average or better. How many times in 16 years? The guy who
I bet he got over – I don't even know what average is, but I bet he got over 800 OPS once. Twice.
Okay, so OPS plus, you know, 100 is average.
100 is average.
He was 0 for 16. And his highest OPS ever was 1975. He hit 305 with a 334 on base and a 377. It's like 711 was his highest OPS ever.
Oh, boy.
He finished, he was an all-star, and he finished 22nd in MVP voting. He won a gold glove in 1978 because apparently everybody else got hurt. Year he slugged 370. He really got into it. He hit three homers.
That's legging out some inside-the-park homers in the Veterans Stadium.
Larry Bowa hit 15 home runs in 16 seasons.
Wow. Yeah, that sounds about right.
It was Dwayne Kuiper with slightly better power. Dwayne was always jealous. That Larry could really rip the ball. He had 14 more homers than I did.
And a far worse attitude than Dwayne Kuiper. Far worse.
Dwayne is the greatest.
He really is. And Larry, he's fine. He's fine. Oh, 7-11. You know, all those stadiums back then looked like the, you know, Cleveland Municipal. So it kind of makes sense. They're poorly lit and 162 games a year in Kansas City hotel. Yeah, okay. So I can let that go. But five All-Star teams for Larry Bowa is insane. That's nuts. I didn't see you spouting that out.
I hated Larry Bowa. Still do, I think. All right, Kelly. Well, thanks for coming on. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, man.
And
I'm glad to warm people up for the 86 Cubs. We'll get people going on that. hopefully that lends some karma to the wheel next time.
Yeah, I asked Mike if he wants to come out. We're going to remember this crap, our favorite work stoppages.
Oh, God.
We also talked about doing one on the lowest points in Bears history. We compare and see if we're close now. But no, we're got a new GM today, and everything's going to be great.
Yes, yes, it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun.
Another 36-year-old named Ryan. This time it's going to be different.
All they have to do is hire a coach past the hour of the day that Bill Polian is up. We just catch him snoozing and hire a guy that... That's fantastic. It's not a low point. I'm glad to hear that from you. So it's not a low point right now because it feels like one.
The low point was going to be we were worried that they weren't going to fire everybody. That's we were going to have to do the podcast. They were running everybody back.
It's good. It's good that they're, you know. I'm sorry, wearing a Bulls or a Bears jacket and jeans to go pick up. Goddamn GM in the airport in an era with, like, it, for all I know, it was Jarrett Payton that photographed him there. I mean, it's just like everyone has cell phone cameras now, yeah. And you're just like wearing Sid Luckman's jersey to go pick up your next GM from the. But that's okay. That's okay. That's okay.
Well, and somebody found a picture from him, like, working the crowd at a tailgate, like, 12 years ago. With the same jacket
on. Oh, no.
It's like, well, of course.
Yeah.
Of course he still has the same one.
Yeah. I've had a jacket since the 90s. I mean, it's, you know, I'm okay with that. Especially if it's free swag.
Yeah.
Your mom gave it to you. She owns the team. She gets free jackets. Hey. Ma got this for me.
Merry Christmas, George. Mike said it was too small. So you can have it. Thanks, Mom. That's great. You don't get to pick your owners, apparently.
No.
Which is a problem.
Or anything to do with the Bears at all, apparently. We didn't get to pick our earrings Bears correspondent named Hub. We would have picked a different Hub. We didn't get to pick our, you know... Like, usually when it's Harbaugh versus Tomczak, there's one guy you want to root for. We didn't get to pick any of those. They were just both bummers. There's not a lot of we haven't been in charge of these Bears. They'd be in Arlington Heights if we were.
There was a great stat, though, on Good Morning Football this morning that included an 84 Bear. And it was, you know, Joe Burrow was sacked 9 times on Saturday. The Bengals won. They listed all of the quarterbacks who had been sacked at least 8 times in a playoff game. Only 2 of the guys won. Donovan McNabb also won a game in 2003. He was sacked 8 times. Steve Fuller made the list. Got sacked 8 times in the NFC Championship game against the 49ers.
Oh, God.
Like, oh, hey, I remember that game.
Yeah. Woo. The game he almost died. To drag his broken leg up on later in the Park West stage and sing a song for the Super Bowl. Yep. They sacked him. He was Larry Bowa was better put together than Steve Fuller. How did he survive that?
Well, I mean, it was
Stellar Ditka offering in the playoffs.
You know,
I mean, I know they weren't supposed to win in 84, but still.
You know, we've talked about it. Mike and I have talked about this before. There's this image of the Bears being cheap. And, of course, now they're really not. I mean, they know how to waste money with the best of them. But they really were super cheap for a very long time because their fortune is from the football team. They're not like Jerry Jones. They don't own a bunch of oil wells that fund the football team. So they were basically limping along year to year. And then all of a sudden the TV contracts kicked in and there was so much money that now they can act like they don't have. But so I kind of wonder if the reason they got Steve Fuller to back up Jim McMahon is that like they wouldn't, if when one of them got out of traction and they needed to put the other one in, they're the same size. They wouldn't have to adjust anything. This will save us. This will save us like $250.
Let's do it.
Was it Avellini or Evans that was still around until like 85 or something? Like that explains that too.
Bob Avellini was around forever, haunting my.
Until the Seattle game, yeah. Oh God, but you know it'll be better now. That makes sense. Steve Walsh and Eric Kramer were the same size. Peter Tom and Moses Moreno. I know they were 8 years apart. Bears fans, I know.
Peter Tom Wilson, Will Fuhrer. No, that was talent. Fuhrer.
Oh God,
he'd be a big that. Will Fuller or Will Fuhrer would be huge right now with a certain segment of America. He'd be able to see a lot of his jerseys at one particular guy's rallies.
A lot of Peter Tom Willis is out there enjoying Will Fuhrer.
All right, we're really going to go.
I don't even
know
if they would. Okay. I can't believe Steve Forbes sacked 8 times in that game. I'm going up on YouTube and looking it up as soon as we're done here. Thanks for having me on, Andy.
Well, thanks for being on. It was a lot of fun.
I agree. Take care, everybody.
Many of us have herpes.